Blog Talk Radio.
Families will lose cash assistance October 1st.
The original four-year limit in Michigan was enacted in 2007 by former Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm, but provided an exception for families whose caseworkers stated that they were making progress finding employment or in counties where the unemployment rate is 25% above the state average. The new law will reduce the number of children and adults receiving cash assistance by nearly a fifth, from more than 221,000 to around 180,000. A spokesperson for Republican House Speaker Jay's blogger says, "This has been a priority of our caucus since day one. The new law, however, only reduces state costs by a minuscule $60 million. Its importance lies in being part of a battery of legislation which dismantles the already shredded safety net and accomplishes the general restructuring of state finances." The overall shift in the Michigan policy is breathtakingly crude. The keys to the state treasury are being handed over to business interests. As of 2012, Michigan business taxes are due to be reduced by a whopping $1.7 billion. The changes amount to a sweeping revision of the tax code and the state policy that directly transfers wealth to the state's elite.
The Michigan business tax, MBT, just 3 years ago, has been precipitously eliminated and is being replaced by a far less onerous income tax, which will only be levied on certain types of corporations. This fall, the state legislature will debate the elimination of the personal property tax, another business tax, which provides between $800 million and $1.4 billion to local governments and libraries. To pay for this handout to business, Michigan residents are facing cuts in every social service. For the first time, pensions will be taxed, costing seniors an estimated $300 million.
Wow.
Yeah, education is being reduced by $908 million, a 15% reduction across the board to universities and devastating funds cuts, funding cuts between $470 and $1,000 per pupil, depending upon the district. In other attacks on those least able to afford it, Michigan will reduce a back-to-school clothing allowance, cutting 12,480 children from eligibility to receive a new set of clothes for school, slash the earned income tax credit for 800,000 working families from 20% to 6%, of the federal credit. And the EITC is a refundable income tax credit designed for the working poor. Reduce unemployment benefits from 26 weeks to 20 weeks. More than half of Michigan's unemployed prime adults of prime working age, 25 to 54, spend a half year or longer looking for work. And Michigan already has one of the largest percentages, 36% of children living in families where no parent had a full-time year-round job. It is presently ranked 47th among the 50 states. As a consequence of the unremitting growth of unemployment, child poverty has increased by an unprecedented 64% since 2000. And the new census data released this week shows fully one in seven people in Michigan live in poverty, a 50% jump in the decade. And Michigan's decline in median house income, more than $12,000 per family over the decade, is the biggest drop in the nation.
Michigan's CAST assistance program is part of the Federal Temporary Assistance for Needy Families block grant. It is estimated that 700,000 low-income families, including 1.3 million children, will be affected by the cuts in the 2012 budget year, as 44 states and the District of Columbia project budget shortfalls totaling $112 billion. California, Washington, South Carolina, New Mexico, and the District of Columbia all joined Michigan in cutting monthly CAST assistance benefits for families this year. For fiscal year 2012, Arizona reduced its TAMF time limit to 24 months, one of the shortest in the country. Oregon is considering reducing the first time limit to 18 months. As of July 2010, TAMF benefits for a family of three were less than half of the poverty line in all states and below 30% of the poverty line in more than half the states.
Wow. So, folks, it's bad and getting worse out there. And these Republican guys just don't give a crap. They don't care. On the bright side, Bush's Toronto visit was canceled amid mass public pressure for arrest. I love that article. George W. Bush was threatened with arrest and decided to stay away from his Toronto speech. Bush's Toronto visit canceled amid mass public protest. Let's see.
Be arrested as a war criminal?
Yeah. Canadians hit reject button on G.W. Bush. Truth about internationally disgraced U.S. president from American public, hidden from the American public. This week's, this is from Veterans Today magazine website by Johnny Punish. This week's appearance by former U.S. President George W. Bush at an event hosted by a local evangelical Christian university has been canceled, while the mainstream U.S. media ignores the international embarrassment. The decision came Wednesday, the same day three former students launched a petition urging the university to cancel the speech. On Tuesday, a class valedictorian and professor publicly spoke out against the appearance following the resignation of another staff member. Bush was scheduled to speak September 20th to about 150 people at an invitation-only breakfast hosted by Tyndale University College and Seminary, home to about 1,400 students at two campuses in Toronto North End. Tyndale supporter Prem Watsa, chief executive of Fairfax Financial Holding and sometimes referred to as Canadians' Warren Buffett, was sponsoring the event, which the administration said was intended to raised the university profile. Wasa did not respond to the request for comment. A brief on the university website Wednesday afternoon announced the cancellation due to scheduling change, but provided no detail, nor did it mention Bush by name.
Tyndale spokeswoman Lynn Vanderwell confirmed the note pertained to the Bush event, which she said would not be rescheduled. She said she could not explain the scheduling change, nor say whether it was the University of Bush who canceled. University President Gary Nelson held a town hall meeting at the school at noon Wednesday, a few hours before the decision to cancel was made public. Faculty reached by the Star refused to discuss what happened at the meeting. Opposition to Bush's appearance at the non-denominational evangelical university has been growing within the school's community since Monday after the story Bush to make promotional appearance in Toronto for Christian College was published in the Star. The following day, a class Victorian professor spoke out.
Valedictorian.
Class valedictorian.
Yeah.
And professor spoke out passionately against the visit. The university also confirmed valued employees quit in protest. Confirmed a valued employee quit in protest. Critics accused Tyndale of sacrificing its peaceful ideals to attract wealthy donors with the exclusive event. Many students and alumni also complained they only heard about the high-profile appearance through the news. They're still not even saying his name on their website, on their webpage, said Dan Odshum, a former student body president who graduated in 2006 and was part of the group that launched the petition. I think it shows they were really trying to sneak in a cash grab through a means they know is dirty. They got busted doing it, and now they're trying to sneak back out again without taking responsibility. As it stands, the mainstream media in the USA has been absolutely silent on the international rejection of George Bush. U.S. media silence serves a purpose for the establishment. This is an embarrassment, a disgrace that America does not want to talk about or face. The fact that we, our culture, and our society are complicit in the wholesale criminal acts of this pathetic head of the torture snake is something that we don't want to talk about. So silence works best. Besides, Lady Gaga is on Dancing with the Stars, and that's much more easy on the soul, says Mike Leon, editor-in-chief of the Veterans News Now. In this Ossoff's view, to me, what's even worse is that our presidency has been disgraced. We're forever scarred by psychotic predators who committed crimes against humanity in our name. And we, the people, are numb, neutered, and morally bankrupt without standing. Instead, the rest of the world has taken over for us as we've vacated the leadership stage. The conscious vacuum has been filled by the Canadians and others worldwide who decide to get up and stand up, fight against what we've become. At best, how embarrassing that we no longer stand for justice, peace, and humanity. At worst, we're the 800-pound fascist in the room pointing fingers at the ghost of Mother Teresa, Mahatma Gandhi, and Martin Luther King. What a disgrace.
And that was by Veterans Today and by columnist Johnny Punish. And let's see, I hope you might go to that. Some good articles there. Our guest tonight, Gail Couture, Corey Townsend, is going to be talking about the Palestinian issue. And I think it's important that we talk about that ourselves. Bring up an article here. Actually, there's two of them I wanted to talk about tonight, but this one here, this is what's happening in this article that's happening in Palestine right now, Israel. And Israel terrorizes WB head of UN bid. Okay?
World Bank?
I'm not sure. WB, West Bank. Head of UN bid. All right. The Israeli forces have abducted at least 9 Palestinians in various parts of the West Bank as Tel Aviv steps up a campaign of terror ahead of the planned Palestinian UN statehood bid. The civilians were arrested on Monday during operations in the cities of Jenin, Al-Khalil, and Bethlehem. A member of the resistance movement Hamas is reported to have been among those captured. And witnesses say some of the Palestinians were taken away from their homes during overnight raids. Despite a security agreement with the Palestinian Authority, the Israeli army frequently raids Palestinian homes in the West Bank and arrests Palestinians. The recent arrests come ahead of the Palestinian Authority's planned statehood bid at the United Nations on September 20th. Israel and the U.S. strongly oppose the move, but Washington has already said it will veto any such bid, the U.N. Security Council. The future Palestinian state would include the West Bank in Gaza and East Al-Quds, or Jerusalem, as its capital. The Palestinian Authority says it believes that more than 130 countries would recognize the state of Palestine based on the pre-1967 borders. However, if the effort is blocked at the UN Security Council, Palestinians say they will turn to the General Assembly, where they are expected to easily win the vote to upgrade representation from observer body to non-member state. The 66th UN General Assembly, due to open on September 20th, will vote on the Palestinian state, and that's tomorrow. Okay.
I wonder what that means, non-member state. Does that mean they get a seat?
It's an observer state, a non-member state. I'm not sure. I'll have to ask Gail that. Because
exactly.
I guess they're non-members of the UN. You know, I'm not sure. So we'll have to see what that means.
As opposed to observer.
Yeah, as opposed to the observer. And there's one more article that I wanted to mention on this subject before we bring Gail on tonight, and that's been about 10 minutes or so. Israel attacks Gaza on the eve of the UN bid. Israeli troops have launched an attack on the northeastern Gaza Strip on the eve of the presentation of the Palestinians' proposal for membership in the United Nations. The assault targeted an area in the northeast of Gaza City on Monday, a Press TV correspondent reported. And I'm just going to read it. The assault targeted an area
of Gaza City on Monday. You read that.
Yeah,
residential buildings were struck during the offensive, but there were no reports of any casualties so far. Although Israeli military forces officially withdrew from the Gaza Strip in 2005, they frequently attack the territory. The Palestinian Authority will formally submit a request to the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon for approval of Palestine's membership in the world body on September 20th during the 66th session of the UN General Assembly.
All right, so that's what's going to happen. And, of course, the Americans have done something wonderful, you know, which I, you know, that was so, so typical of them, of our Republican Congress. If I can find the damn article.
On there.
Yeah.
You didn't put it on the.
Yeah, I forgot to put it up. It's here somewhere. It's here. Oops. I will find it. It's right here somewhere. Not too far away.
U.S. Rothschild Zionists, Republicans, submit resolution supporting Israel's right to annex the West Bank.
The U.S. Representative Joe Walsh, Republican from Illinois, this from Haaretz.com, was an Israeli newspaper.
Of course, you hear nothing about this on the mainstream media.
Oh, no, they're not going to tell you that. You know, there's too many people that are dead set against this bullshit. U.S. Representative Joe Walsh introduced on Monday a resolution with 30 co-sponsors to support Israel's right to annex the West Bank in the event that the Palestinian Authority continue to push for a vote at the United Nations.
What has that got to do with that?
Well, we've got what I consider to be a potential slap in the face coming up with the vote in the U.N., which is absolutely outrageous, Walsh told Political website last July. He was quoted as saying that it's clear that the United States needs to make a very strong statement. I would argue that the president should make this statement, but he's not capable of making it. So the House needs to make this statement if the Palestinian Authority continues down the road of trying to get recognition of statehood. The U.S. will not stand for it, and we will respect Israel's right to annex Judea and Samaria. I mean, who the hell are these guys? Who the hell are these guys to even propose this kind of thing? You know,
it has
what I mean?
Nothing to do with our country.
It has nothing to do with our country, and it has nothing to do with any other country. And it's the indigenous right of the Palestinians. I mean, who in the hell are these momos? This Walsh.
Meanwhile, on Sunday, Congressman John Boehner
and Boehner of all the people,
Republican Westchester, delivered the keynote address at the Jewish National Fund's 2011 National Convention in Cincinnati, Ohio. Boehner said that it is the U.S.'s duty to stand by Israel, not just as a broker or an observer, but as a strong partner and a reliable ally. Referring to the Palestinian statehood bid at the U.N., Boehner said that Israel had demonstrated time and again to seek nothing more than peace, a peace agreed to by the two states and only the two states. Like every prime minister before him, Prime Minister Netanyahu knows peace will require compromise, and he accepts that. He welcomes that.
That's
right. They've shown
no degree of compromise whatsoever.
And
compromise.
Just as a reminder, Israel never has defined its borders because it
That's
wants
right.
all the land.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah, it's just a sickening breed of ignorance up there. I mean, this Zionism is a disease, folks. It's a disease.
You give your tax dollars to Israel. In return for that, the tax dollars go back and buy your congressmen.
That's right.
Who then vote for all these outrageous things.
That's right. It's a sickening thing. Oh, here's something interesting, folks. Listen to this noise. This has been happening all around the world in different areas, but this has happened to happen in a game Earth groans, or the harp, or is it harp warfare? The strange sound phenomenon. It's only about 30 seconds.
The day before the big northeast quake in the U.S., weird sound was heard during a baseball game and caught on TV. It's also been reported in Russia and Canada, also reporting an earthquake and other locations. So let's listen to this.
How do you announce
the first inning?
Listen to the noise in the background.
That's a haunting sound, if we've ever heard one. One ball, no strikes. And the punt is fouled. The count is 1-1.
And what could that possibly be? Somebody shut the door.
It sounds supernatural.
Yeah, now that was in a Rays baseball game. And it's also been heard in Russia, Canada, everywhere where there was a little... now, there was a 6.4 earthquake up in British Columbia recently, and they heard this noise, and then there was
more
one...
More earth groans on harp warfare.
Yeah.
So you heard the sound.
Yeah.
More and more frequently from diverse places on the globe, and sometimes just preceding earthquakes, and not just by a few individuals, but by stadiums of people, and even whole cities. The day before the big northeast quake in the U.S., the word sound was heard during a baseball game and caught on TV. It's also been reported in Russia, Canada, also preceding an earthquake, and other locations. Let's do a little dot connecting. And by the way, if you're one of those waiting for some government scientists or official to come out with the real story on this and the whole gamut of weird stuff going on, you're living in a dream world. It ain't going to happen. What we can do is look at these events themselves, compile what information we can, and put some kind of ideas out there for discussion. I don't pretend to fully understand everything, but I'm very eager to point out what appears to be anomalies and patterns happening in our world that seem to have serious significance. And as many have found out, when you're sincere and open and passionate about your research and finding real truth, it usually paints a pretty clear picture. As a little aside to start, I'm a little concerned about what's becoming a knee-jerk reaction by the so-called alternative community at the mention of harp anymore, that it's overkill and bordering on paranoia to always bring it up. Obviously, not everything is attributed to harp technology, but can you blame anyone for first not looking at the event was possibly caused or exasperated by these evil elite PTBs or whomever? That's completely healthy and understandable. I say let people react as they will if you must. Answer with facts and respect. When we start broad-brushing or judging and excluding each other based on point, article, or post, it's not a good sign. Are we becoming our own truth Gestapo? Beware of anyone trying to stir things up and turn us on each other. That's a sure way to eat ourselves, as the old symbol goes.
Yeah, well, you know, so much for that.
Well, he's talking about the woodpecker phenomenon.
Well, there's a whole lot of things that are very important to know, and I'm going to refer you to this article because it's a good article. It's before it's news.
Earth groans or harp warfare, the strange sound phenomenon.
Yeah, and I think you'd be amazed by it because even though this guy is trying to, justify whatever he's trying to justify, then it doesn't exist. Believe me, it does.
No, he's not trying to do that. He's just trying to say...
Well, he's saying he doesn't know anything, but yet he knows something, you know? So it's like... But what he's saying is that, check it out.
And people are collecting the information and trying to find a pattern to it.
Right.
And as you know, it's not being reported on the mainstream media. They don't say anything about it at all.
Right. So anyway, that's the news and views. And I'm going to bring up Gail Thompson in just a second here.
Our guest.
Yeah. So
bring her up and... That's kind of interesting that...
Yeah, you can play that song. It's 3 minutes. Oh, we only got a minute. So.
Tokyo may have to be evacuated. We'll play that after our interview. I think that's kind of interesting. And in the UK, state child snatchers steal another baby. How about this? Girl is 23, is seeking justice for her daughter, Angela, who was removed from her care and placed for adoption 2 years ago at the age of 6 months. She succeeded last year in persuading the European Court of Human Rights to take up her case. It has been given British authorities until Tuesday to respond. Neither an alcoholic nor a drug abuser, she says she was not given a chance to prove that she would be a good mother and involved active giving Angela to strangers. It's a major crime in the eyes of social workers.
Hi, Gail.
She was damaged.
Hi, Leo.
Hello, Gail. How are you?
I'm good.
Hi, Gail.
How
are you?
Hi, Lila. Good.
Yeah. So, great to have you on. Thanks for being on tonight.
Oh,
we already read a couple of articles on the problems that are happening over there right now. And
the fact that the vote is coming up on the Palestinian...
Yeah,
for membership and statehood in the UN. What's your take on that?
And also, yeah, there was one other thing that came up, which we read tonight, which was I saw Joe Walsh, some Republican in the Congress, put in a resolution to try to have to allow Israel to annex the Gaza and the West Bank. Did you hear about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he has 30 other co-sponsors. People.
I mean,
co-sponsoring
that.
Yeah,
in retaliation to the UN thing.
Right.
So why don't you start with giving your take on what's happening down there at the UN and...
you were just at a protest down there last week, so you're going to tell us how that went as well.
Okay. Well, let's start with Joe Walsh's resolution and his 30 co-sponsors. We know that Congress is Israeli-occupied territory. I mean, there's no question about that. The U.S. Congress, the White House, are occupied by Israel, just as Israel occupies the West Bank and Gaza. So Joe Walsh's resolution, which I think is stupid, to allow... Israel to annex the West Bank is ridiculous because Israel already occupies the West Bank. So it de facto has annexed the West Bank except for the little pockets of Palestine, the little pockets of little Bantustans where Palestinians have so-called control, except that they're like prisons. They have absolutely no control over their movements or their...
Right.
Coming and going or their trade or anything like that. So that's another stupid resolution from the United States Congress. The demonstration on the 15th in New York was pretty good. It didn't have as many people as I had hoped, but it was pretty lively. It started in Times Square. There were lots of very rousing speeches. And then we marched from Times Square to the United Nations.
Oh, anything in particular that, from anyone?
Anything in particular that what?
Who
was speaking?
Yeah, any major personalities or?
No, I mean people who are well known in the Palestinian movement, but not rock stars or anything.
Yeah, rock stars or MPs.
Quite a few women, actually, very interestingly, quite a few women speakers who were very passionate. So that was good. I mean, and I think it was just a pro-Palestinian rally. It wasn't necessarily supporting Mahmoud Abbas's bid for UN membership. Mostly the crowd seemed to be in favor of, not really in favor of the two-state solution, I would say, although I guess some people are. As far as I'm concerned, I do not support, I don't support the two-state solution.
Will you tell us why you don't support the two-state solution, Gail?
Because I don't think it's a viable solution for lasting permanent peace.
Why is that?
Well, because I don't, for one thing, what's interesting is the U.S., you know, supports a two-state solution, right? And Israel says it supports a two-state solution. So the question that needs to be asked is, why are they so hysterical about Mahmoud Abbas asking for membership in the United Nations, which absolutely serves the two-state solution? And the answer is...
possibly. The only reason I thought that they would be so hysterical is because then Palestine could bring up war crimes, you know?
Well, that could be it. But, I mean, it's not the two-state solution that they want. They want the two-state solution that Israel wants, which is basically to institutionalize the occupation. In other words, Israel
right.
wants to be able to continue building illegal settlements, stealing Palestinian land, and shrinking, you know, the Bantustans, the Palestinian Bantustans that it's created, and it wants Palestine to agree to that two-state solution in which Israel would still have control over all of the Palestinian borders, over its airspace, over its immigration, over its border with Jordan. There wouldn't be a border with Jordan because Israel would still, it would pretend to be on the 1967 borders, which would be a border with Jordan, but Israel demands to have a military presence there. So it's a bogus two-state solution that Israel is looking for, and that's why they object to this move in the UN. And I think you're right, Leo, that, you know, even though I'm against the two-state solution, membership in the UN would provide Palestine with access to some of the organizations and courts, international courts.
I really feel that, yeah.
Now, right now, what is their position? They're a position of an observer?
Yeah.
An observer nation or something?
Observer state.
Observer state.
And what does that mean exactly? What does that do for you?
It does absolutely nothing. They're asking for recognition as... They're asking for membership, which would
membership.
Yeah.
Well, this article I was reading stated that they were looking for a non-member recognition. They're not even non-members right now. They're
They're observers. They're like a quasi-state. I mean, they're not recognized as a state in the UN, but ironically, they are recognized as a state by 120 nations
right.
around the world, or more even, maybe 130. And they declared their statehood, back in 1988 and again in 1993 or something.
Right.
Remember when Arafat...
Said,
you know, in my hands I'm carrying a dove or an olive branch and a gun, you know, don't let me drop the olive branch or whatever it was.
Right,
You know, but the thing is, since Oslo, which was supposed to come to, since the Oslo negotiations in the early 90s, which was supposed to establish a Palestinian state within 5 years, the population has tripled. And so, you know, Israel is not interested in peace, really. That's the bottom line. They're not interested.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they were, they would have come to some agreement years and years ago. What they're interested in is more land.
How does the voting look at this time? Do you know?
Well, Abbas said he's going to the Security Council, right?
Right.
He's going to the, is that what it's called, the Security Council? With the 15?
Security Council, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And the states, the U.S. has promised to veto that. I mean, wouldn't it be just an amazing and wonderful surprise if the United States did
that? Yeah, Well, I was going to ask you.
The only reason it would, if Palestine gets, I think it's 9 out of the 15 or more, then
right.
I don't know exactly what the mechanism is, but if it gets a huge majority, then the U.S. will have to use its veto, right?
That's right. It overrides the veto, right?
Yeah.
We don't know. I haven't read what other members of that council are going to do. Russia said they would.
They would support it. All right.
China.
Now, who are the other members?
Besides
the United States and Russia.
Probably.
Is China on there?
France, China, U.S., U.K., and Russia, I think.
France, China, U.S., Russia, and what?
The U.K.?
U.K., yeah.
U.K.
I'll tell you in a minute.
Because you may have Russia and China voting for it, but it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
Yeah.
It's beyond me how they can continue to deny this. Anyway, it just overwhelms me. What are you looking for
that article.
Which one?
The one I was looking for, the article that talked about the vote. But I can't find it.
The vote?
The vote on Palestine is an article that talks about it.
A bunch of them.
I don't even know if they're going to vote on Friday or if they're going to,
vote
is going to be later, but nothing's going to change on the ground.
No, nothing at all. But what's happening is it'll get worse for them right now because they're looking at retaliating against them.
Yeah, I saw some Israeli guy predicting, the Palestinians are going to get violent. Hello?
right. I'm looking at this article. A Palestinian is left homeless as Israeli demolishes West Bank houses.
So it's sort of like the beat goes on. They just don't stop.
Yeah.
What do you think that, now you're a member of the Middle East Crisis Committee, right?
Yeah.
And what is the mood of your group in response to this idea of one state? Do they feel the same way that you do?
Well, we finally, after debating this issue for umpteen months, probably more than a year, we actually voted at our last meeting to support the one democratic state solution, and
you plan to promote the one state,
yeah,
one person, one state. Well, they have, in order to do that, I mean, they have to, if they have a one state, then they have to give them the rights of a democratic state. No.
Well, who has to give who?
Israel has to give the Palestinians.
Israel would be dissolved, right?
Israel doesn't have the right to give anything. If you're a state, you're a sovereign, self-determining state, and Israel is going to have to negotiate on that basis, in which case there would be negotiations between two equals instead of what the negotiations have been, which is between an oppressor and the oppressed. An occupier and the occupied. It's ridiculous. There's a wonderful website called onedemocraticstate.org. It's spelled out, onedemocraticstate.org, which has a declaration, a vision of the movement. And, it's not going to be easy, but the entire territory of Palestine between the Mediterranean Sea and the Jordan River is one country that belongs to all of its citizens, including all those who live there and all those who were expelled over the past century and their descendants. So that is the right of return, right, which is a right that's embedded in international law.
No, you'd have to have the right of return. It doesn't make sense.
Absolutely. Well, what's going to
happen? So basically, two states would have to give up their sovereignty to become one.
Well,
and out of that would form a new state. It seems like a huge challenge, just huge.
Well, it is a huge challenge, but what it would do would be to reunify Palestine as a democracy in which all of its citizens have full equal rights for all of its citizens. You know, the right to
Well, I think people generally believe that Israel is a democracy.
Well, it isn't a democracy because it calls itself the Jewish state. And you
can't
be a Jewish state and a democracy at the same time, because by calling yourself a Jewish state, you automatically give second-class citizen to second-class citizenship or status to everyone who's not Jewish. You just can't
mm-hmm.
have a Jewish state and a democratic state. It just it doesn't add up. So.
Well, I think that's one thing that the American press, when the mainstream media talks about Israel, they do not understand that it's not a democracy. Or they pretend that they don't understand that. They talk as if it is. And I think it's excellent that you're making clear that it really isn't. And you begin there.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things that have been put out in the mainstream media that aren't true about this situation.
Exactly.
And I certainly hope that Palestine prevails in their bid to become recognized by the United Nations in the way that they want to be.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's an uphill battle. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out, don't you think?
I do, but I think the tide has turned somewhat in the last, since Operation Cast Lead at the end of 2008, beginning of 2009, when Israel,
I was going to mention. I wanted to thank you. When you gave us this popping resistance in Palestine by Mazen Komsaya, and I read the book. I was amazed. Very very well written, by the way, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. But I wanted to. You know what surprised me so much, and I think it surprised so many people. Unless, of course, you know it as well as you do, how many atrocities overwhelming atrocities were committed by the Israelis against the Palestinian people. Physical, militaristic, brutal atrocities. And that's over 700,000 Palestinians were jailed at one time.
Ethnically cleansed.
Total ethnic cleansing. Yeah, absolutely. And so it's like that. I recommend highly anybody getting this book, Popular Resistance in Palestine by Mazen Komsaya,
to really understand what's happened there.
Wow! I mean, it just opened my mind because I didn't realize how. I realized how long the struggle was, but I didn't realize how barbaric and how unbelievable. Some of these events were and were continued to be, and yet the United States is still supporting this barbaric country. You know what I mean? These horrible Zionist people that are killing and maiming children and women and just
people.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I had a huge argument with my publisher over this issue. It turned out he's a rabid Zionist, okay, which I didn't realize until,
too late.
And he pulled my book because he thought because of one essay that I had in it. And he said that I was a racist. I told him he was a flagrant Zionist, son of a bitch, you know. We had a war of words on that one. But, my book got pulled for that. So, you know, I feel very strong, and it wasn't that bad. It was just anything pro-Palestinian with these pricks are all going to be, you know, is in the, you know, just ain't going
to
work.
Anything in the media that they have anything to do with, they're not going to put that out there.
Sure. So, we had a huge flare-up over that, but it made me understand. I always knew there was a great bias there, but it made me understand it even more so in the media.
Well, you understand the depth of it.
Yeah, absolutely, the depth of it and how how deep it goes, even to small publishers, and people are so frightened by
and the truth can help.
Yeah, you know, to publish the truth regarding these issues. And he had no problems with me calling George Bush names or anybody else names, but when it came to a truthful look at the Palestinian issue, he just went overboard on that one. But it made me so identify with these people, as well as the indigenous movement throughout the world, which I know you're so familiar with because you write about it, you know, every week in the Indian Country Times. But
Indian Country Today Media Network, actually.
Today.
I just wanted to mention about, the United States has kind of painted itself into the mother of all corners with its...
It's kind of what?
You have to speak up, Gail.
I say that the U.S. has painted itself into the mother of all corners on this...
Absolutely.
And I want to remind people that earlier this year, there was this scene at the United Nations when the U.S. Ambassador Susan Rice voted against a veto by the Security Council and a resolution condemning Israeli colonial expansion, the illegal settlements, right? 14 of the 15 members of the Security Council voted for this resolution, except the United States. And you know what was so stupid and absurd about it? The resolution was pieced together using language from speeches and statements that American officials have made about Israel's illegal colonies. Because remember, Barack Obama himself condemned the ongoing...
That's right, he did,
...and asked Israel to stop. So Rice was basically vetoing American policy, and there she was in this peculiar position of having to explain why the U.S. was against settlements despite vetoing the resolution that was made up of American officials' language. It was really stupid. And now they've put themselves in the same position with this Palestinian vote, you know, for membership in the U.N. And you know, they're just going to be even more isolated than they already are.
Oh, absolutely. You know what amazed me? There was this quick article that came up in the London Philharmonic, suspends musicians for anti-Israeli remarks. Did you read that?
No, but I saw the video.
Yeah, we saw the video with you. Yeah, it was great. But it was came up here yesterday.
But several of the musicians from that London Philharmonic got suspended because they said that the Israeli Philharmonic Orchestra was an instrument of Israeli propaganda. They signed a letter.
Oh, no, I didn't see that. Could you send that to me?
I'll send that right over to you. As members of the London Philharmonic Orchestra, it is because they put their names on it. As members.
That's right. So they've been suspended for 6 months or something.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, pretty cool.
That was a splendid action. I thought that was one of the best directions.
When I saw that, I thought it was great. What they done.
The Beethovians, they were called.
That was a very good video. Very cool.
I'm hoping to encourage the organization Middle East Crisis Committee to do some direct actions here in Connecticut.
That would be good. What did you have in mind for a direct action?
Well, a couple of things. There's been some success I don't think any of our members are going to do any flash mob dance because we're all pretty old, but but there's, you know, for example, there are boycott, divestment, and sanctions stickers that you can go and put on into grocery stores that sell Israeli products. There are these actions whereby some activists have made, you know, great big Free Palestine signs on big sheets and hung them over overpasses on busy highways, things like that don't cost too much money, but that you can get arrested for.
Well, if you do it carefully, you won't.
Yeah.
I just sent the article over to you, by the way. So,
okay.
It's an email, yeah.
You should get that.
You should have it. But, no, the thing that amazes me is how strong and how powerful this Israeli lobby is. And like, for instance, because like this Philharmonic Orchestra, four people signed a letter stating that it was, you know, Israeli propaganda, and they wind up getting suspended because of it.
Because they tell the truth.
My book gets pulled, because, and I have a huge argument with this clown because he's a rabid Zionist, you know, so it's like, and it's everywhere, and the news media is so there's nothing, very very little on the mainstream media at all about the Palestinian issue.
Mainstream media is owned by all the Zionists.
Of course it is. So,
and they work to
there.
Keep anything of any controversy out of the media.
Yeah.
And as I said to you before, you know, we send our tax dollars to Washington. They in turn send it to Israel. Israel in turn sends it to our individual Congress people whom they purchase.
Right.
And then we have the votes that we've had.
Do you guys have Link TV?
Link TV.
Yeah, it's like an independent commercial free.
No, I don't think we do.
No.
Oh,
is that on the net or is that on television or what?
Yeah, on TV. We have like I don't know what we have, Direct TV or something. I don't know.
Oh yeah, yeah, you got satellite dish.
But anyway, it shows a lot of documentaries, and there's this extraordinary documentary playing right now, not at this minute, but like during this time on
what is it?
On the lobby, on the influence of you know,
Israeli lobby.
Yeah, in America.
Wow.
It's phenomenal, you know, and you have legislators who were booted out of office because they, you know, maybe voiced their criticism of...
Yeah, they were against these guys, you know.
And they just booted out of office. And,
yep.
You know, there's that fellow, Wilkerson, he was Colin Powell's chief of staff, remember? Anyway, he's talking about, you know, it's taboo. You can't even talk about it. You can't talk about Jews. You can't talk about Israel because you'll be accused of being... you know, even if you say something like, you know, Jews are overrepresented in the government or in the communications industry, you're accused of being anti-Semitic.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, stating a fact, even if it's like a factual thing that you're saying, you're accused of being anti-Semitic.
I look at who our
diplomats are in the Middle East, and I'm saying, why does the American government always send Jewish Zionist people to represent us as diplomats in Arab countries? And how would Israel like it if
a
Palestinian diplomat, you know, to man the U.S. embassy in Tel Aviv? You
That's
know,
true.
They would be outraged. They would be outraged. They
Absolutely.
Wouldn't allow it. You know, but if I say that, I'm accused of being anti-Semitic.
Well, it was no different than sending what's her face, Condoleezza Rice. She was hated by everybody she went over to see. I mean, the Arabs have no respect for her at all, and the Russians couldn't stand her. And you know what's oddly enough is, I don't know if your take on this, but how she suddenly turned. She's not anywhere. I mean, she disappeared
quickly
from view. You know, nobody wants to talk to her. Nobody wants to interview her. Do you find that odd?
No.
No, I don't. I don't either. I guess.
Well, we really appreciate your coming on, Gil, and updating us on what's happening. And I hope you'll promise to come back after this vote, and we'll have a lot more to talk about.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you. And have a good night.
Okay. You too. Bye.
Okay. And yeah, Woody coming up here in just a second. So let's play his theme song. And wait a minute. Oh dear, Lila. Okay, wait a minute. And we got Woody coming on, and we're gonna play his music and bring him on in just a second.
Thank you, Lila. Good evening, sports fans. Watch your heads on the ropes as you step into the ring with Woody. Tonight's topics, my Stone Cold locks, other NFL news, boxing, Rivera's record, and Red Sox tanking. Okay, let's get right down to it. As far as my Stone Cold locks go, I am 5 wins, no losses, and 1 push thus far for the year. Pretty damn good. Let's see if I can continue to trend in the positive. I'm going to take the Patriots at the Bills, laying 9. The Bills are a much improved team. They beat my Raiders on Sunday. I certainly did not like that. They're 2-0. They're feeling it, but I believe it's time for a little comeuppance. Tom Brady has looked spectacular thus far, throwing for all kinds of yards in the first 2 games, and I think they're going to give the Bills a little tune-up and kind of give them a little bit of a wake-up call. Welcome to the NFL. You think you're a good team? Well, you're not that good. So I like the Patriots, -9. I'm going to take the Lions for the 2nd week in a row. Got a team I would never actually take. They're going into Minnesota. They're laying 3.5. In my opinion, the Vikings absolutely stink. They have a quarterback I can't stand, Donovan McNabb. Detroit is young. They're hungry, kind of like the Bills deal. But Detroit's been so bad for so long. I mean, it's just been horrendous for them. But they're looking much better, much improved, and the Vikings stink. So I think this is a good game for the Lions. And they're actually giving away a few points, which is unbelievable. And so I'm going to take the Lions -3.5. Okay, game number 3, Steelers at the Colts. I took the Steelers last week. They were -14.5, I believe, -14, and they covered no problem. They're laying 10.5 with the Colts. I don't think you're going to have a problem covering with the Colts. The Colts stink. They were beaten on Sunday by Cleveland. I believe all they could come up with was a bunch of field goals. They kept it kind of close for a minute, and then they ended up losing, and whatever the case may be. They're at home. I could care less. The Steelers are looking, you know, just to take it to them. They don't care that Peyton Manning's not there. That's not their problem. So I'm sure they want to go into Indianapolis and hammer a Peytonless Colts. So, again, Patriots -9, Lions -3.5, and Steelers -10.5. I remind you, I am 5-0-1 thus far. Try and beat that. Okay, a little more NFL news. The Eagles-Falcons game with the 2 big market teams, a juicy subplot with Michael Vick's return to Atlanta and a Sunday night audience. The Eagles-Falcons game drew this week's highest NFL game rating. Sunday Night Football drew a 15.7 overnight, up 3% from last year. Week 2, Sunday's Nighter. Next week, NBC unfortunately has the Colts hosting the Steelers. So we'll be able to actually watch one of the games I've picked. And you'll see, the Steelers will cover, and then some. Going back to that Atlanta game, the NFL fined Atlanta Falcons cornerback Duncan Robinson $40,000 Monday for his illegal hit on Philadelphia Eagles wide receiver Jeremy Maclin in Sunday's 35-31 Falcons win. The league noted that Robinson was a repeat offender of its more stringent safety rules, having been fined $25 last October for a hit on another Eagles receiver, DeSean Jackson. In a letter to Robinson, the league told him future offenses will result in the escalation of fines, up to and including suspension. No one has been suspended for outlawed tackles since the league began regulating the safety of hits more closely in October. However, NFL headquarters has warned that defenders could be subject to a mandated benching now that players have had time to adjust to the new tackling guidelines. Robinson led with the crown of his helmet and delivering the blow, with replays seeming to show the hit Macklin on the chin during a completion. Macklin shaken up but returned to the game. I saw him catch the ball, Robinson said. I saw him run and take steps trying to get upfield and score. I've seen a replay of this one several times. Me being a former defensive player, I always take the defensive guys back. But and believe me, I am all for receivers getting their clock cleaned. But this one was just kind of unbearable to watch. I don't know. It wasn't too cool. I'm not really too cool with some of that, the cheap shot stuff. I like a nice, good, clean hit that a defensive guy can level you with. But the cheap shot stuff and kind of leading with the helmet, you know, that's kind of pushing a little bit too far. And I'm going to have to agree with the NFL. Something does need to be done. And, you know, they've taken action. They're finding guys. And now, you know, they're threatening to put guys on the bench. I guess we'll just see how that works out. But, again, I watched this one a couple of times, and it was very unpleasant to watch. The guy definitely got leveled, but it wasn't really a clean hit. It looked as dirty as it was. And that's not what, you know, that's not what it's about. You can see a guy getting his clock cleaned, and the hit looked like, you know, okay, legit. But this just looked dirty, and that's what it was. It was a dirty hit, and, you know, he's going to pay for it out of his pocket. That's the only thing that seems to bother these guys, you know, is, you know, getting into their pocket. And speaking of dirty, we're going to go right to boxing, which is, this is kind of an interesting story. HBO's Larry Merchant, he has no regrets about telling boxer Floyd Mayweather Jr. on Saturday something you rarely hear from a sportscaster, especially an 80-year-old one. He told him, "I wish I was 50 years younger and I would kick your ass." Merchant said he doesn't regret much, and if you regret something, it certainly wouldn't be this. "Some part of me was responding to the moment. I had no idea it was coming. In hindsight, I'm happy the way it came out." Now, Merchant's on-air line about wanting to be younger came after Mayweather beat Victor Ortiz in a controversial finish in an HBO pay-per-view fight. Mayweather had knocked Ortiz out, but if you had watched it, Ortiz was in the middle of apologizing for a headbutt, and they, I don't know, but they had their gloves up, but and then Mayweather just clocked him like, bam! I mean, he's got fast hands, and that was it. It was a dirty shot within the rules, typical of something that Mayweather would do. He's a crafty one. But it was definitely dirty. But, again, within the rules. Who cares? I guess, you know, you want to win, you want to win. That's what it's all about. In boxing, it's, oh, boy, but I tell you. Mayweather then told Merchant, who joined HBO in 1978, and he's done post-fight interviews for, you know, for decades now, that HBO should fire you because you don't know shit about boxing. And in a post-fight news conference, Mayweather maintained his stance that HBO should drop Merchant. Merchant, who said he was a last-string halfback under football coach Bud Wilkinson at Oklahoma, recalls years ago giving a forearm shiver to a corner man who tried to grab his mic, but said he never fired back at an athlete during an interview. "I've never been tempted to. I've had a number of fighters go off on me, but my response would always be to say thank you in the interview and let viewers decide, you know, what to make of it. But this was like a spontaneous combustion because I was being attacked." Merchant said he's heard from HBO that he defended himself in the right way. Spokesman Ray Stallone said HBO has no plans to take disciplinary action against Merchant, adding that it was just a heated exchange in a live TV environment. Now we move on. Boxers and networks you know, like to play big roles in promoting the sport. Merchant said his face-off with Mayweather wasn't part of any hype. A lot of that goes on before the fight, but I've never seen anybody choreograph emotions after a fight. Sometimes things get volatile after fights. This is a game with a lot of heat and emotion. Guys come out being hit for an hour. People say and do things that, you know, they don't say at a golf tournament. Pretty interesting. Merchant has a quip for Mayweather, who has famously demanded Manny Pacquiao submit to a blood test before the pair could stage what would be a mega fight. Mayweather.
I'm going to interrupt you. I think we got a caller for you. You want to take him?
Honestly, yeah, maybe after I finish, sure. I mean, I don't know. Is it boxing related? What is it?
I have no idea.
We don't know. We just have a call, and why don't you come to the end of your segment, and we'll put him on if he wants to. Go ahead.
All right. Keep going.
Keep going.
Merchant says that Mayweather says he won't take a blood test. You know, he in the past he wanted Pacquiao to take a blood test, but now he won't take a blood test. So that's kind of shiesty. But again, Floyd Mayweather is a very crafty individual. He's a bit of a showman, and he's very crafty, and he knows how to get the biggest dollars out of the fights and everything else. Again, I saw that shot over the weekend, much like the hit on the NFL, and God, it just wasn't right, but it was within the rules. So I guess within the rules, it's within the rules. I mean, what are you going to do? Maybe the rules need to be changed if guys are going to act like that. But, Mayweather knows the rules. So he knew he was, what he was doing was within his right. And the guy was a younger boxer, and he should have just been more on point. But, hey, those are the breaks. Okay. Just a little bit back about football. Lot of injuries in the NFL. Lot of injuries. The Dallas Cowboy quarterback Tony Romo played with a significant injury over the weekend. He had a punctured lung, one cracked rib or something. I mean, just really some nasty kind of stuff. He's acting like he might play this week. You know, since it's only one rib, I guess they can shoot it up and take the pain away. But, I mean, if you got a punctured lung, man, Jesus, I think I might sit out for a week. That's just me. I don't know. Punctured lung? I'm sitting down for a week. Another big injury in the NFL, Nick Mangold of the New York Jets. Now, he plays center for the Jets. Now, a lot of people say, hey, he's just a lineman, really, who cares? Not so. The center is like the brain of the offensive lineman. He calls all the blocking schemes, especially like on run blocks. There's a lot of technical and like you go here, you go there and all that other jazz. Well, he tells everybody where they're going on run blocks. Pass blocking is much simpler. Anybody can drop back and pass block. Believe me, it's not that difficult. Run blocking is a bitch. You got to know where to go. You got to run here. You got to go there. You got to push this guy. I mean, it's very intricate stuff, you know. And he's basically, he's the brain of the offensive line. So he's out now for at least, two or three games. And they've got a guy in there that they basically got off the street to replace him. That's going to put a lot of pressure on quarterback Mark Sanchez, because they're going to have to, throw a little bit more. As it is, their run game has been kind of shoddy as it is. It hasn't really been, all that great. This certainly isn't going to help their offense. So that's definitely something to watch. Peyton Manning strolled into Indianapolis Colts practice for the first time since his operation. It's his first appearance. He had neck surgery on the 8th. The four-time league MVP, I guess he showed up for a short workout. Of course, he did not participate. Wayne greeted him with a nod and told reporters that Manning is walking it off. Manning missed Indy's first two games after having his third neck surgery in 19 months. Obviously, the Colts lost two of those games, both of those games. And, it's going to be a tough road to hoe for the Indianapolis Colts. So we'll just have to wait and see. A lot of people are saying that the Colts should just, screw it, screw the season, lose all the games, get the number one draft pick, and grab this great quarterback that's going to be available and have him on the bench for a couple of years, and then you just transition from one great to the next. But, I'll have to just wait and see how that goes. Now, speaking of greats, yesterday, Mariano Rivera He's the man. He broke the record. He has 602 saves in Major League Baseball. He's the all-time save leader. Now, the guy under him is Trevor Hoffman. He's at 601 saves. The next guy is Lee Smith with 478. John Franco, 424. Billy Wagner, 422. Now, those are some great numbers. 602. What is even bigger inside of that is the stuff that he's done in the playoffs. I mean, the last time he gave up a playoff home run, dig this, 2000, was in the World Series to Jay Payton. So that's back a ways. And it's not like the Yankees are not in the playoffs every year. So that's the last home run he gave up in the playoffs, like 10 years ago. Crazy. What makes his run so amazing is, a couple of things. Two things make his run really amazing. One, his durability. He's been doing it for a long time. Guy gets injured for a minute, and then he's out for just a minute, and then he's right back at it again. Two, which is almost even more amazing, he's been doing it with the same pitch. Now, if I kept throwing something to you and I'd say, hey, I'm going to throw it in the same spot every single time, you would probably, hit it. But that's not the case. People aren't able to get him. He's not throwing the ball exactly in the same spot, but he's throwing the same type of pitch throughout the quadrant. If you look at the strike zone as a box, he throws it all throughout that box, typically on the edges of the box, up and to the left, down and to the right, up and to the right, down and to the left. Those are the spots where you want to go. You don't want to be in the middle of the box because then you're going to get banged up. It's going to take you right out the yard. So typically, Rivera throws on the edges of the box, but he's been doing it with the same type, with the same pitch, the cutter. That's what's so amazing. And he's been doing it for such a long time. A lot of times, guys get used to a pitcher. Guys get, they get your number. Closers usually only last for 4 to 5 years, before guys start figuring them out, or their stuff declines, or a lot of guys strictly rely on velocity, velocity more than location, and then, that's just it, and their career is over. If you look to Boston, I'm going to talk about next, you got Papelbon up there. His numbers have gotten progressively worse over the years. So, that's what happens. A guy gets progressively worse. He's great, lights out, then he's a little bit less, a little bit less, a little bit less. But Rivera has just been fantastic throughout, and, that's just great. For Rivera to do what he's done is just simply amazing. And is there another guy in the pike coming down the road that's, could you say that, that's the next Rivera? Not to my knowledge. I don't believe so. Rivera came from the 90s. It's a different game now. I don't know, man. To be honest with you, I doubt, is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? I would absolutely think so. You think he would be a unanimous first ballot Hall of Famer? But there's always one jerk off that, somebody up in Boston, some drunk up in Boston that has a vote that wouldn't give him the vote or something, or whatever the case may be. But, he's definitely going to the Hall of Fame. It should be unanimous, but, probably won't be. But it should be, because you should go just on, on the guy's performance. And supposedly he's also a great individual as well. I guess, does all kinds of building back in his home country. And I guess he wants to be a preacher when he's done and all kinds of good stuff. So, good for Mariano Rivera. And, hey, it's not like his career is over. He still has another year to play with the Yankees. And then I guess he'll negotiate, from there. So we'll just have to wait and see. Now, speaking of meltdowns, the Boston Red Sox are on their way to melting down. And what a shame it is. I had the chance to watch the Red Sox yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I watched John Lackey pitch. And he went 4 1/3. And he was just getting so banged up. It was great fun to watch as a Yankee fan. I personally can't stand John Lackey. He was great when he was with the Angels. Boy, he had no problem beating the Yankees and the Red Sox. But he has been as bad for the Red Sox as A.J. Burnett has been for the Yankees. And it's nice to see the Red Sox finally have a signing that goes haywire as far as pitching goes. But the way he looked at Terry Francona when Francona came to get him out of the game, I mean, dude, you've given up like 8 or 9 runs. You've been getting banged up the whole game. Are you kidding me? You're in the middle of a playoff race. Of course Francona's coming to take you out. You stink. Absolutely unbelievable. But Lackey stared him down. I thought there's going to be a gunfight out there. Unbelievable. You know, and Burnett pulled the same garbage yesterday with Joe Girardi. Yankees had given Burnett a nice little lead. And, you know, then they chip back in, and they kind of got back into it in the fifth. And, you know, it was 5-3. And, you know, Girardi had seen enough. You know, he wasn't going to let it go any further. You know, we need to win the game. Yankees need to win the games. We need to clinch. And, you know, the Yankees are more important than A.J. Burnett's ego. And it's, you know, it's really too bad. Burnett has a lot more skills than John Lackey does, you know. But you never know by the way he pitches. And it's just too bad. I mean, Lackey's been getting banged up worse than Burnett, but I don't know. All I know is that the Red Sox had a 9-game lead over the Tampa Bay Rays for the wild card. That has shrunk to 2 games in the win column and 1 game in the loss column. My personal opinion is I don't think the Red Sox have played their way out of the playoffs. I think they're going to, you know, they're going to make the playoffs probably by a game or two because there's only, you know, so many games left. Yankees are beating Tampa Bay tonight by a score of 5-0. And even though the Red Sox are losing, it's just 1 game less, you know. When the team is in front, when they lose and the team that's in behind and they lose too, it doesn't matter. It helps the team in front because there's less games. So if the team in front wins and the team behind wins, it still helps the team in front because there's less games. So Tampa Bay is going to run out of games, in my opinion, and the Red Sox will probably get smashed out in the first round of the playoffs, which would make me perfectly happy. I would certainly love to see that. So we'll just watch that because the season is coming down to a close, and October baseball is on its way, and that's going to be a lot of fun. Team in the National League, you might want to watch out for it. It's also on the way to be flaming out is the Atlanta Braves. Can the Cardinals catch them? Can the Giants catch them? I don't think the Giants can. I think the Cardinals have a distinct chance of catching them, but we'll just have to wait and see. Before I do my close, I guess I have some type of phone caller. I will take that call now.
I'm there, buddy.
No, the caller wouldn't wait. He hung up. Yeah. So maybe next time. Maybe he'll call back again.
Oh, I wonder if it was a heckler. What was the deal? Did you even talk to him on the side or anything? Or?
We didn't talk to him.
I don't think it was for you anyway. I think it was somebody else.
So we don't know. It looked like a familiar number when Leo thought about it, so we don't really know. But maybe he'll call back, and if so, maybe he'll call next week.
What state was it? Any idea?
It was Connecticut.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You never know. Okay, well, too bad. I would have debated whoever it was. If it was a negative caller, I would have enjoyed a little sword play, not a problem. That's it for this week.
Hold on, he's calling back.
It's Johnny, though, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Hello, caller?
Yes. Hi, sorry I interrupted your train of thought there in the middle of the sports thing. I'm not really calling with a sports question. I just happened to make the phone call in the middle of your sports piece there.
Okay,
brilliant timing.
But all I know is I was told when I came to America that the best team in the world was the Red Sox, right?
You must have been drunk that day.
Oh, I don't know. Well, they tell most of the Irish when you come to America, one thing you need to always remember, son, the best baseball team in the world is the Boston Red Sox.
That's right. You are a typical fan that I speak of from Boston. Drunk and delirious.
Well, nice. Yeah, you can't beat Boston for the beers up there anyway. You know, it's a good drinking time in that town. So. I don't know much about the game, but I do know the pubs are good.
No, that's true.
So that stands for something, right?
Certainly true. I'm going to sign off. That's it for this week, folks. I will talk to you all next week.
Okay, buddy.
All right.
All right, Pete. Have a good night.
Thank you. And we'll just play Woody out with his song. Stay on the line, John.
I certainly will.
Okay. I don't think we can get him on here.
I'll be off
this week.
Okay, well, all right.
Okay. Can't get it to play.
That's weird. Well,
yeah.
you. try it again.
No, it won't play.
It won't play?
I think we have a time delay. I'm still listening. I'll turn down the volume on the radio here.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know what you guys had lined up for, or how much time do we have? I just called in.
We got about 4 minutes. We shortened our show since...
Oh.
You
hadn't been on for a while.
You hadn't been on for a while, so we shortened...
I just had something here I kind of wanted to just... I guess there are basically 10 facts. I might have time in 4 minutes to get through them all.
Well, you can go through a little longer. It records for the archives, but right now I got 4 minutes left. So
I'll just go straight through it because of the short time then.
All right.
As you know, or a lot of people may not know this, perhaps this is why I'm saying the post office is pretty much in big trouble, everybody knows. So get ready to imagine a world without the post office. They're so deeply in financial trouble that there's probably no way to sustain it long term. So email, FedEx, UPS, and all those others, DHL, have just about wiped out the minimum revenue needed to keep the post office alive. Basically, most of the mail people get now is junk mail and bills, but that may be all by design, you know, to bring in a system where we'll have to pay for emails eventually and then have some other system for all our parcels so all our letters can be read by Big Brother. So it's a very sad thing to see that happen. It's like they can't fix the post office. It's, you know, they can't find a financial genius who can come in and take care of it, just like any small business that's in trouble. So they're just letting it sink, and they're drilling more holes in the ship, in my opinion. Checks that we use, Britain is already laying the groundwork to do away with checks by 2018. It costs the financial system billions of dollars a year to process checks. Plastic cards and online transactions now will lead to the eventual demise of the check. And this is all getting us used to the paperless society and the cashless society. It's all tied in together, and the coming microchipped population. And if you've never paid your bills by mail and never received them by mail, the post office would absolutely go out of business as well.
Right.
Now, the newspapers... the younger generation simply doesn't read the newspaper, at least the ones that have grown up with the Internet. So if they're 18, 21-year-olds, they don't have much time for it at all. They certainly don't subscribe to a daily delivered print edition. The newspaper may go the way of the milkman and the laundryman coming to your door. And as for reading the paper online, get ready to pay for it, like a lot of other things. They've hooked you with the online like a drug now, and you have to have it. The rise in mobile internet services and e-readers has caused all the newspapers and magazine publishers to form an alliance. They have met with Apple, Amazon, and the major cell phone companies to develop a model for paid subscription services like pay-per-view and TV. The books, as you all know, you have that new device out there. I can't remember, what's it called, a Kindle, I believe it is?
Yep.
See all the young kids in the coffee shops playing around with these, and even the adults. And yeah, it's a good kind of a device to read a book, I suppose. Except for, don't forget, the history can be always deleted and pulled out. The bit that's anti Big Brother can be just left out in the new online edition. Anything that would,
I never thought about that, but you're right.
Right, yeah. They can rewrite history at the stroke of a digital pen, sort of thing.
Very easily, as needed.
Yes. Yeah, people say they never give up the physical book that you hold in your hand and turn the pages. But then many of us said the same thing about downloading music from the iTunes. I wanted the hard copy CD, but then it quickly changed my mind when I discovered I could get the album for half the price without leaving the home and get it right online. And the same thing will happen with books.
It's already beginning to happen. You can get a great book for $10 with a Kindle, and it costs $35 or $40 or $50 in hardcover.
Yes.
Yeah, and of course, just before all this Kindle thing came out, right, probably 6 months beforehand, you started to see Borders, Books, and Barnes & Noble starting to shut down major parts of their chains throughout the country. And the same thing's happening throughout the world with bookstores. So they always take away the it's like they're sending us down a tunnel with spikes on the way back, like the fish hook sort of thing. You go forward into this technological world, and there's no going back to the old way. They won't be the paper book publishers. They won't be the landline. They won't be the checks. You're being pushed into a sort of a cylinder. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And where it's all leading is eventually, you know, towards the microchip population. And you'll have to have that to buy or sell as well. It's all definitely leading there, but that's another story. I just mentioned the landline phone there. Well, unless you have a large family and make a lot of local calls, you don't need it anymore. People, most people keep it simply because they've always had it, but they're now paying double charges for the extra service. And all the cell phone companies will let you call customers using the same cell provided for no charge against your minutes. So, you know, they're making it really encouraging to use
a cell phone.
Cell phone only, yeah. And that has implications in regards to how much microwave current they do run on microwaves, whether people realize that or not. Near the towers, it's quite dangerous. There's hot spots. That's a known fact. And that's something people have to look up for themselves. And children shouldn't be sleeping with those cell phones near their heads, because they've had brain imaging shots that show that they had inflammation of the brain, especially in children. And even people who worked for the phone company in England developed a type of Alzheimer's from using them and having them constantly up to their faces. And I understand now, of course, the Bluetooth industry is helping with that, but even still,
yeah.
It's a dangerous device somewhat. And you can always be tracked like a microchip by your cell phone, so Big Brother loves it.
Well, yeah, I was going to play one tonight. I might play it tomorrow night, but there was a great interview on Russian TV from this guy who was talking about how Facebook and he's a private investigator, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he said that Facebook and Twitter and MyFace and all those
social
very good
but
those people,
things,
yeah.
He says are unbelievably, you can pick up everything from there, but he says the biggest culprit is a cell phone. He says the cell phone. He says you can find it. You can find anything out in the world from a guy's cell phone records. You know, you can even tap into his conversation without him knowing.
And they're doing it backdoor.
Yeah, and they're all doing it backdoor. I mean, every these.
And Google lets the FBI and everybody else in all the time.
Yeah, Google lets everybody in. You know, so it's there's nothing safe there at all. And
there's no such thing as privacy.
I was going to play that tomorrow night. I'll play that one because it's very, very good.
Scary though, John, isn't it? There's no privacy.
Yeah, the changes that are going on in our lives. I mean, we notice them. I mean, if more than the younger people would, they're just taking it for granted that technological changes or changes in general happens like, you know, snap, snap, snap every day. And it really used to be that way. It was a 50-year increment. Before
there was a time when nobody knew anything about you unless you
disclosed it.
Now everybody can just Google up your name or something and find out who you are, you know.
Yeah, there was a story today on one, it was maybe NPR or some of the stations. I just happened to hear it perhaps in the car. I don't know where I heard this today. Had a busy day. And apparently some lady in Wisconsin or some small town in America has had to be driven out of the town by the gossip that goes on the Facebook. Use it as a kind of a tool to drive people out of their towns, to make their lives miserable. You know, they send a slur about the lady or something, and it becomes so bad that you might as well leave. You know, in a small town, you can understand where it could get very serious.
Yeah.
That's really sad.
Yeah, so it may be another story put out by the powers that be to bring in more cyberbullying laws, which, you know, we can't say anything bad about certain people, you know, even so it infringes again on your First Amendment right, and you willingly give them up, which is
That's
worse
true.
Have them taken away by standing army coming in and ripping them out of your constitution. You willingly give up something. It's much worse than having it been taken away by an invader. Such as when we go to the airports and we stand in front of the TSA guys and we put our arms up like little cowards and let them take our shoes off like we're little cowards, and we might as well squawk like little chickens that we've given up everything. We just willingly give away our freedom under the Fourth Amendment to be safe from unreasonable searches and seizures, and anything to be searched for, they're supposed to have a court warrant specifically saying what they're looking for. But we've given that up because of the allegations that 9/11 was done by 19 Saudi Arabian terrorists, which is a complete crock of baloney, as we know.
Uh-huh. Well, the next thing supposedly is there's going to be
aliens. It's the aliens next.
Yeah, there's a number of a fake alien invasion. I have stories about. Perhaps maybe next week I could get into that. There won't be time tonight.
You can be on next week.
Yeah, I think I may be able to get on next week.
We'll set up a half hour for you.
At 9:30.
Yeah.
From 9:30 to.
It'll be great to have your segment back on, John.
Yeah, I've been kind of looking forward to it. Anybody who knows, I've been on the air for a couple of years on your FM radio show, and then I was on for, I don't know, a number of weeks at least on the Blog Talk radio show, and then I kind of took a hiatus there. I had a number of issues going on in my life, so won't bore you with the details. You know how stuff goes.
It's great to have you back, and we hope to have your segment. We'll promote it. You think you'll talk about the aliens next year, next week?
Well, aliens or the so-called aliens. It'll be perhaps a faked alien invasion that may be planned to be like a terrorist type of thing.
There's so much crap going on right now.
We're going to make a transition from the war on terror to the war on aliens.
I think they had actually talked about this in the Club of Rome papers. You know, it was going to be. We're going to use the weather and the threat of global warming at first, and after that it was going to be either an alien invasion or asteroids hitting the planet that we all had
to
watch.
You know what I played tonight? There was a half-minute video, and it was on the HARP program, but it was about the sound that was going
before earthquakes.
That it's happening before earthquakes, and they've heard it all over the world. But this one happened in a baseball stadium with the
ballpark.
Yeah, in Canada, right? And there was an earthquake right after that, a 6.4 earthquake over British Columbia.
Heard about
that. Well, this piece, I think this is the one. But it had the announcer was actually saying, what a weird noise that was. It was like a whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, it was all through the stadium. It was really weird.
And then
right after that, there was an earthquake.
That's interesting because, well, you know, we know there's a connection between sound. Sound is a something that can cause damage to property. It's frequency you're dealing with. The example that comes to mind right away would be when an opera singer can hit the high-pitched note and crack it glass, and that can and has happened. It's pretty rare. Or you can get a high-powered frequency. The dog whistle will be an example. The dogs can hear it, we can't. In that case, nothing breaks. But they have scientifically used sound and as a weapon to actually cut through things and break things and bend things.
I think that's
so
what they're doing.
They were suggesting that maybe it had something to do with harp.
Well, yeah, the when you vibrate the earth to a certain frequency, it will cause supposing there is a natural fault line somewhere nearby, like the San Andreas Fault, when you get the right frequency to move it slightly, once you tip one of the tectonic plates, small amounts is all it takes. Once it starts to go, it's a kind of a domino effect. And that sometimes, you know, who knows, they've been trying to take a lot of people out in the stadium. There's a number of other stories which I was going to talk about them tonight, but I'll just touch on it very briefly. I've just heard a audio got sent from, actually it was from Mr. Sewell, and I just heard it about an hour ago, so I'm not fully able to explain it to you after until I listened to it, but it was from Benjamin Fulford, and he has said that there was a group within this country and throughout the world. People may refer to them as the Illuminati, but a big rift has formed between them over the last couple of years. And a lot of the countries in Europe don't want to deal with the, I suppose we just call them, for the sake of picking another word, the Zionist element.
Oh, really?
Yeah, those particular people apparently are rather on the run right now. There was a big meeting held, 57 different countries had leaders that met, including their military leaders, on a boat off the coast of Morocco. This is fairly recently, like early last August. And they all pretty much agreed to not deal with the U.S. dollar anymore. So what they want...
That has got to do with the Zionists, though. That's interesting.
Yeah, so apparently what had happened was some of these people, the Illuminati, who once, it's been said in their own writings, the guidestones down there in Georgia guidestones, where they wanted 90% population reduction. The people are completely insane. They're just complete psychopaths who are running the planet. But now there's a split. The military people are beginning to get nervous, and what they did was, according to Fulford, there was some of the basis where these guys were planning to kind of sit out their lives for a number of years in comfort after they had done a nuclear strike across the planet. Apparently, people within the Pentagon, the good guys, let's just call them, found out where they were planning to go hiding. There was underground cities, one in the Midwest. I can't remember the place. Two in this country. One's out in the West Coast, one's in the Midwest. And they detonated a small nuclear device, which caused an earthquake in two places under the earth, killed 30,000 in each city.
Whoa. They had 30,000 people in
each city, and the story hasn't broke yet anywhere.
In the underground cities?
Underground cities in this country.
Oh.
These were the facilities where the people like the Bushes and the Kissingers and all these were planning to sit after they triggered an annihilation of the upper surface of the planet.
That's not going to be released, Johnny. Those people are underground.
Well, apparently they can't go there. Any of their bases now that they were planning, all the food storage was there. They're being sabotaged by other people. So now they can't carry on their plan. Their little evil plan is after being majorly sort of nipped in the bud, thank God. So they're hopefully some good that are on their side that are finally getting down to business to rid us of this scourge that's running the planet with the evil that's been going on, creating wars just for profit and such like, you know.
Can you email us that article?
Yeah, in fact, it's an audio. I sure will. I'll email it to you just after the show. I would actually like if you guys could play it and people can make what they will of it. But this guy, Benjamin Fulford, has proven to be a very, very honest writer. He's a former writer with Forbes magazine, I believe.
Really?
Yeah. And that would make a suspicious album because Forbes magazine is not something. But I could say he's a former writer there. He's an economist. He knows a lot of stuff.
Illuminati guy is what you say. He's a former globalist guy.
He's one of the guys, but not going along with the wars and the 9/11 type events. They were totally against that. But the people who went against these the bad Illuminati guys, you know, there are different divisions of them, Masonically connected, and they're all over the cut. They have different ideals of how it's all going to turn out, and they fight among themselves, just like a gang of robbers after robbing a bank, I suppose.
Yeah.
And basically, they've kind of realized that the way things have gone is not in their interest, and they're going to have to rein in the nutcases, the Kissingers and the Bush family. He says there will be hundreds, if not thousands, of arrests at the highest levels.
Really?
People like Brzezinski, Kissinger.
That would be wonderful.
Well, it would. But you know, again, this is only news that I just heard tonight. So I'm just giving it to you fresh off the block, so to speak. And I still have to follow up on the fine details of it. And if you could play,
I appreciate you sending it over, though. That'd be great.
Yeah, we'll take a look at it too.
Yeah, if you put an hour long, the full audio segment, I'm going to send you. But so you know, you have to listen to it in full. It starts off a little shaky, but then it gets really into the meat and potatoes of the article. And the guy who was interviewing him, whose name I can't recall now, really challenges him on how can you prove this. Yeah, he tries to really trip him many times throughout the interview, and the guy comes through very solidly every time. In any time you try to catch him.
Well, we'll look forward to that.
Yeah. So maybe you could play little segments from it over the next few weeks on your show. It might be interesting. Or perhaps even have him on your show, Benjamin Fulford.
That would be an interesting thought, too. Yeah, as soon as I get it, I'll check it out.
Well, thank your researcher for sending that.
Yeah, that he did that one. It was different from what I usually get from him, so.
Well, we appreciate it. And we're going to look forward to having you on next week, John.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting.
For a full half hour.
Yeah.
So that'll,
yeah,
and it'll be live. Right now we're just being recorded, so.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, it'll be able to play back, but, you know.
I don't know how much time we got left, but I'll just touch briefly on the chemtrail issue and the geoengineering weather modification. That was what I used to talk about on your show, as you know. And there isn't much news, nothing much has changed, except that there has been a pretty big drop off in the amount of aerial obscuration, the aerial spraying. Last Friday here, over the northwest corner, in fact, I was down in Naugatuck working, there was a major spraying operation in the skies. The artificial cloud cover started around 2:30 and formed an overcast haze within about 4.5 hours. But then by late evening, it cleared out again, which is really odd. And I don't know how they were able to do that. They just make it like the clouds are there 1 minute, and as it gets dark, it literally just almost disappears. But they did show on a Discovery Channel, sorry, it was a History Channel, which is odd, been History Channel. It was a documentary called Weather Warfare. They showed in a lab how they can make that happen, putting electric current into the jar, well, a large, like a fish tank, and they formed an artificial cloud. And the minute the guy flicked a switch, the cloud just disappeared.
Really?
It's to do with the ions in the atmosphere, I guess. But
they're totally in control of it.
Yeah, exactly, using the HARP facility, which you know puts amperage into the or wattage into the high ionosphere, and it basically is able to, when they put the cloud cover in, it creates a different pressure over a given area, because clouds create high pressure and low pressure. So where there would not be a high, they could create a high pressure. Where there would not be a low, you know they can switch it and turn it whatever way they want. But then again, yesterday, pretty bad. They sprayed all day. It was all sorts of X's in the sky, all the way down to Waterbury, right up northwest corner, all the way up to, I'd imagine, up to where you guys were, up in Salisbury.
Yeah, up here too.
We've had a wet day, pouring wet day today, and I know they'd used it up. I just know they did. I think we would have just had a small, maybe, shower if they hadn't come in with the weather modification yesterday.
Yeah, originally that was the forecast, passing shower.
John, I got to ask you this, because I don't know if you've done any research on it, but right now you're looking at this incredible drought down in Texas.
Uh-huh.
Can't they relocate? Can't they
make it rain?
Trailing down there.
You can make it rain anywhere on the planet now. There's several companies.
So why are they causing this drought down there?
Well, it's partly because I think they have this plan called the Rewilding of America. A lot of the areas in the map that you'll find, if you go to that website, just type in the Rewilding of America. There's red zones and yellow zones and green zones, and a lot of the zones are in the Texas area. They want all the human population off those areas. The reasons for that, I don't know, other than they want to herd the population of the future into compact cities and get us all out of the countryside. were much more easier to control in compact cities. Another reason might be the area that you're speaking about in Texas. I heard it's the area that has burned is about the size of Connecticut. It's massive. It's absolutely huge. If they really, the drought's been going on there for a year or more, I think, as well, in Texas, Oklahoma, and places. They have the capability to hire cloud seeding companies, which can't
sure.
make it.
Sure, I was wondering why they haven't done this, or why they're, or if they have, why it hasn't been working.
Well, this is it. There's no reason it can't be done. There's that company you can just type in on your computer right now, Weather Modification Inc., and that company's in North.
But all these farmers, though. I mean, the farmers, shit, they would know what. They would know cloud seeding. They would have.
Well, apparently, they may not be allowed to do it or something, or else they don't believe it works. I don't know why, but I think what will happen is the farmers will be driven off the land. Many of them have sold their farms for pennies on the dollar because it was useless, dried-up land. They couldn't make a living there. The banks stopped lending them money. And
well, it's the same as what happened to the floods. Soros bought all the flood farms. All these flooded farms.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. They have different ways of getting people off the land. They can get drought, flood you, hurricane you, tornadoes, whatever.
They have farmlands.
Yeah.
And it's probably the same there. Once he buys all these for nothing,
they'll put in factory farms.
They'll put in factory farms. They'll irrigate the land and make it whole again, and then it'll, make all kinds of money.
Or with the North American Union joining this country, where we're basically giving part
that too. But then they have food. I mean, food is the new gold. You know, food is gold right now. It will be, and that's what I've been reading anyway. That's why they're investing in the big time in farmland,
agriculture
everywhere. So, that's what we have to look.
A lot of people will not be probably insured. They're saying it's an act of God and stuff like that. And what you probably find is in 10, 15 years, when the North American Union becomes more commonplace, a lot of that land will revert back to Mexico.
Maybe, but I think what it's going to revert to is farmland for, very
big corporations.
Very big corporations.
Well, no, a lot of it's forest area. A lot of it wasn't ever farmland. What the last fire that happened, the big one, is...
Even the forest
area. Why do you believe it'll revert back to Mexico?
Because there won't be any such thing as the United States of America. If America, as we know, is becoming part of the North American Union, Canada, Mexico, and the United States will be all one country called North America. We'll have the same currency, the same militaries will all be combined because of 9/11, of course, how handy that was. And the motor vehicle departments are all synchronized. It's on our own the government website. You go SPP.gov, Security Prosperity Partnership. That's the nice, cute name they have.
Yeah.
So there will be no difference between... It's like a country without
borders.
A country without borders. So if you cross from Texas into, I don't know my geography down there, San Antonio, Mexico, wherever it is, it would be no big deal. So Mexicans could just start moving across to the United States, the former United States, let's just say, because who's going to stop them? They have all legal rights because we've all agreed to join the North American Union.
Well, Obama just signed the amnesty bill, the executive order.
To illegal aliens legal.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't deport an illegal alien now.
Right. Well, there's no such thing as an illegal alien if he's a Mexican. Maybe if he's from a different country, maybe he's from England or Ireland, or if you were Canadian.
Where he's from, if he's here illegally, you can't deport him, because that's what Obama's law stated.
Mm-hmm.
I read that on the show a couple weeks ago.
But this North American Union thing never gets the...
publicity.
A minute on NPR or, well...
Oh, no, no, God.
Nobody talked about it at all. We talked about it a few years back.
Yeah.
And we haven't heard anything about it since. I've heard a little about it,
But I think it just steadily moves along.
Yep. And, I don't know. But anyway, Johnny, we're running out of time here, so.
Okay. I would like people just to look up, go on YouTube. YouTube, Lou Dobbs talks about North American Union. You'll probably find a few videos, and he'll explain. You'll see it right from his show on CNN, talking about how the United States, as we know it, is finished because of this merger.
But is there anything newer? I don't know. Is he talking about it on Fox? He's on Fox now.
Right, well, this was when he was on CNN two, 3 years ago. But nothing has changed. The North American Union has not been taken off the cards. It's going ahead, and it's like we're living in a house up on stilts, and the termites are eating the stilts while we're partying away.
Okay. Well, they've kind of eaten away our time here tonight, but I want to thank you, Johnny, for that was nice. And I'm looking forward to having you on next week. That's great to have you back again.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I get nervous coming on radio, but you know, once I get motoring along, I guess my blabbermouth keeps going. So
you do a great job, John, and we look forward to seeing talking with you next week.
Yeah.
Okay, and tell Woody I said up those Red Sox.
I'll tell him.
Or Red Sox, whatever it is you say in football or baseball, I don't know. I know as much about baseball as a pig knows about bank holidays, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, he's a huge Yankee fan. He doesn't like the Red Sox. So that was So love you, Johnny. I'm glad you joined us again tonight, and we'll look forward to you next week.
That's great. Okay,
good night.
Good night, Leo. Good night, Lila.
Good night.
Good night, John.
And thanks, folks, for joining us. And we hope that you stay tuned for us tomorrow.
And,
certainly next week at this time for John Brennan.
Yeah, John will be on next Tuesday night. So tomorrow night we'll join us right here, and we'll have news and views and all that other good stuff. And Thursday night, my guest will be Dr. Fineman, expert in psychedelic drugs, actually a psychedelic experimenter. From the 60s, who has written a book called Psychedelics. And we'll be talking to him on Thursday night. And Friday night, we got our night with George Dixon. So we got a big week for you up ahead. And want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And hope you had a good time.
Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody. Oh, and want to thank Gail Townsend, too, for joining us, our special guest tonight. So good night, everyone.